Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this special edition of Bang the Book Radio for Friday, August 9th. Going to chat with Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast about UFC on ESPN Plus 14 or UFC Fight Night 156, the promotion's first event in Uruguay. So we got plenty to talk about with regards to that and also with the fights here that are on the card. Over at bangthebook.com, we've got some phenomenal work being done by our very talented cast of writers. Hopefully you've been checking out those division previews from Danny Borgs, looking at his model numbers versus the market numbers for week-by-week spreads and also season win totals. We got a lot of college football content up for you as well in the lead-up to the season, and I'll be putting together my five favorite season win total picks as we, you know, adjust our power ratings, as we see how some of those position battles are shaking out and all those types of things. If you've missed anything here on Bang the Book Radio, all of our football shows with a long shelf life, obviously. The Bettors Box on Thursday had a lot of good thoughts for you on that program. And then next week, we're doing the Bettors Box again on Monday and Thursday. We've got a great UFC event next week with Christian Pina, UFC 241, Stipe Miocic, Daniel Cormier. Obviously, a ton to talk about with that. And then beginning August 19th, the Daily Show returns at least an hour Monday through Friday, generally recording around 11 to 12. I'll get that show out to you no later than 1 o'clock. So definitely looking forward to the full return of Bang the Book Radio here as we get ready for the football, for the college football and the NFL seasons. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB in the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest here on this Friday edition of the show, and that is Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Christian, how's it going today, man?
Good, man. Preseason football starting this week. We got baseball, and we have two more weeks on this stretch of UFC before we get a little break in one of the premier events of the UFC year upcoming. And before that, you know, we have Valentina Shevchenko looking to, you know, continue her mark and stronghold on the division and really being this division's pioneer, trailblazing version of what Ronda Rousey did. So it's a lot going on out here in the desert, man. I know you're coming out here in a couple of weeks, and we'll have some great UFC in the meantime.
I got to ask, man, before we get into the UFC stuff, do you do preseason NFL?
I do when the information is right and the information is out there, man. And you'll see this happen so much, you know, professionals pride themselves on that info. And when you can find that, you know, who's playing, who's not, what a team wants to get out of it, whether it's scheme driven, whether they want to get guys run, that's where the value lies in the preseason market for sure. It's also a little bit of a live betting opportunity, although limits are low. So yeah, I definitely get into it a little bit. It's just a lot to digest and dig through in the midst of grinding out baseball and UFC events this week.
All right, so we take a look here at this UFC Fight Night 156 card or UFC on ESPN Plus 14. There are about 15 different names for each and every UFC card here. This one also labeled Shevchenko versus Carmucci 2. And the 2 is a little bit misleading here because it was a long time ago that these two actually squared off.
Yeah, man, you could call this a decade in the making, but really this is, you know, the different lifetimes for these two females. I mean, they fought really, you know, back in 2010 under what was then the C3 fights banner when women's MMA was not permitted or allowed inside the UFC. And look, Carmucci finished her, you know, in the second round via knockout and went on to do some great things in the sport. That being said, this is kind of, I feel like the breakdowns on Shevchenko fights are somewhat the same every single time. If you enjoyed Ronda Rousey's dominance, you'll really enjoy what Shevchenko has to do right now. She's just physically so much stronger than anyone in the division much like we saw with Rousey, until somebody is able to kind of catch up to that physical learning curve or Shevchenko herself declines, you know, she's going to be the only one that can beat herself. And she really has the fight IQ to not let that happen. From Carmucci's standpoint, she's going to want to get this fight to the ground, and that's going to be the issue when you're at such a, you know, strength disadvantage. You know, Carmucci having her number, quote unquote, or whatever narrative you think may be in the back of the head again. This was a very different version of Shevchenko more than a lifetime of fights ago, and who she has become for sure. So look, it's obviously, when you have a fighter that's beat somebody, despite how long it is, the gut instinct is to take this huge, huge, huge underdog when you're looking at Shevchenko minus 1500. Like, I completely understand it. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a moral victory and Carmucci survives. So I'll take Shevchenko by decision in this one.
Well, when you look at the first fight between these two, as you mentioned, September 30th, 2010, also the first fight in the United States for Shevchenko. That one in some, you know, random town in Oklahoma, Concho, Oklahoma. And if somebody on the show is from there, or maybe it's Concho, I don't know. But if somebody on the show or someone listening to the show is from there, you know, I apologize for talking down about your town, but you know, definitely a different scene for Shevchenko that first time around. And as you mentioned, a lot more accomplished now here in the UFC as well. But something kind of struck me reading your preview over at bangthebook.com, which we did get up early Thursday afternoon. Even though Shevchenko, anywhere from 1,300 to 1,500 out there in the market, you're still not fully convinced that she finishes this fight and that maybe it goes to the cards.
Yeah, and look, the Shevchenko, it's a weird thing when you try to predict not necessarily the if, but when in the past to victories here, for sure. But, I mean, you got to understand, these are both natural bantamweights that are going down, you know, to their 125 pounds. So when you look at this, you know, this one, from a size perspective, Shevchenko's not going to have the biggest size advantage that she normally has. Carmucci is right up there with her as in, you know, one of the, you know, pure natural flyweights. I get that. But it's not the, you know, physical advantage that Shevchenko usually enjoys and can just lean on in times of not desperation, but when things aren't going 100%, which is rare, she's able to always rely on that. And while she does have, you know, will have the slight size advantage here, it's not going to be what she, you know, has enjoyed in the past. And we've seen that, you know, be a, I don't want to say a crutch, but it's something she can always pull out of her back pocket because physically no other girl is able to match that. And when you also look at this, I mean, in theory here, striker versus grappler, every grappling advantage pretty much is, you know, on the way of Carmucci. So obviously that's going to be, you know, her style, and just, you know, eking out this decision would be a best case scenario by, you know, a gross split with enough time and top control. While Shevchenko looks to stick and move and do what she does as one of the most, you know, well-rounded mixed martial artists in the game. So I think those blends of those two styles, I just, you know, when you look at Shevchenko fights, she's just always been able to smother and use her size. And I just don't know that she's going to have that obvious of a glaring advantage here.
A couple of men's welterweight fights here on the card. Vicente Luque and Mike Perry, the one that's on the main card here for this event. Luque, a minus 225 favorite going up against Perry, anywhere from plus 175 to plus 185 on the take back, depending on where you're looking around there. What about this fight? How do you think this one plays out?
Mike Perry is always going to be polarizing, and he's always going to be something of an enigma. He, you know, has a lot to say, and he's brash, and he is who he is, and people will like that or they don't like that. And, you know, people almost forget that he came into this, you know, came into UFC as this vicious, vicious knockout artist with no jiu-jitsu, no wrestling. And once he was put into those waters, you kind of saw what happens. And now he's, you know, something of a decision machine almost at this point. You look back at his last five, he's 2-3. Not great, but he's been trying to evolve his game. And obviously the UFC, you know, sees something in him. And I think it was a conscious plan for him to just almost get in some of the best sparring in the world that he can to, you know, change his game. And I have all the respect in the world for people who do that and do that on the biggest stage, as he's, you know, not necessarily, you know, his only, you know, not only, but he's only finished, you know, via knockout, no submissions, and the two decisions as well, losing two decisions. So he kind of went from that killer be killed kind of Gaethje style for a little while, and he's becoming a little bit more well-rounded. That being said, he is not Vicente Luque well-rounded, losing only one of his last 10 fights and just to Leon Edwards. And obviously there's no shame in that one as well. So look, this is going to be a war. Luque definitely has the wrestling advantage. I know Perry is getting better in that department, but he's just not on this level. I do like this over again. Mike Perry has stopped, you know, knockout hunting, and you know, Luque is someone who knows how to fight the exact type of fight that he needs to win. And everything that Perry does outside of that one vicious right hand that has not found a home in a while, you know, with Perry, this is going to be who can kind of take the least damage. That's for sure. So I think that this one does go to decision. I think the over 2.5 when that comes out makes a ton of sense in that situation, as both guys, you know, Luque will be wary of that right hand of Perry, while Perry has to respect just about everything from Luque.
So as we look at some possible decisions here, both on the prelim card and on the main card, as I mentioned at the top of the segment here, first event in Uruguay, in Montevideo. So when you look at that, I mean, do you have any idea of what you anticipate from a judging standpoint? Will things be, you know, probably pretty fair here?
I'd be lying if I told you I had much to, you know, if I knew what to expect from Uruguay judges. That's the truth in the situation. It's just you get to kind of file it away if you see something of a style that they did prefer when you looked the, or you thought the other way or whatever the case may be. A little bit of a learning curve, and that's, again, why I tend to lean towards more the over 2.5 or fight will go to decision rather than who will win said fight, go, you know, fight decision.
All right, so we move to the light heavyweight division here because I think this one's kind of interesting. It's been pushed back a couple of different times here. Volkan Ozdemir, Ilir Latifi, you've got this fight here. Ozdemir, about a minus 145 favorite against Latifi. And yeah, these are a couple of household names. This should be a pretty good fight.
It should, and Latifi is somebody that I'm really high on. And ever since, you know, I've always said OSP is Ovin St. Preux is pretty much the easiest fighter in the UFC to predict outside of Donald Cerrone. And with that fight, I you know, Latifi going out there winning a pretty big bet for me, I always have a lot of respect for the guy. You know, this one, when you look at this, I mean, Ozdemir is trying to prevent a 4-fight losing streak, and his back is against the wall. He's always somebody that's always been on the cusp there, but can never really break out. And, you know, here we are, you know, where we could be fighting, you know, seeing that 4-fight streak come to fruition. When we look at Latifi coming off decision loss to Corey Anderson, but did, you know, have those very impressive wins over Tyson Pedro and aforementioned OSP. So, you know, both guys looking to get back on track for sure. Latifi is, you know, a great striker, but if he is, you know, standing with Ozdemir, that reach advantage is going to be very real when you look at that, you know, about 3 inches there. Ozdemir is only going to need one opportunity to end this fight. If it does go past the first round, it will get, you know, the longer that this fight lasts, I think the longer, you know, the more it favors Ozdemir for sure. I think that Latifi will do kind of his, you know, patented stick and move type of thing here, but eventually Ozdemir catches him, puts him down, and gets back on track. Latifi's just not ready for this type of opponent, in my opinion.
Anything else on the main card that's kind of caught your attention here?
Not really, man. Truthfully, the over on the Mike Perry fight, I think it makes the most sense on the main card there. A lot of my most opinion things come for the prelim portion.
Anything on Enrique Barzola? I know that we've talked about him before in some of his fights. He takes on Bobby Moffitt here in this one. And, you know, Barzola, a modest minus 135 favorite, but I know we've mentioned him in the past. So is there anything that stands out about his fight this weekend?
Yeah, man, two guys with great grappling, and that's what, you know, Uruguay, and they will certainly love that. Barzola just had his, 4-fight winning streak snapped and against, you know, a unanimous decision against a guy in Kevin Aguilar, who a lot of people thought Barzola was still better. Everything in, you know, Barzola is a decision machine. That is for sure. Every fight of his last 7 ending up on decision judges' scorecards. Moffitt also had a 4-fight losing streak snapped in his last outing. So lost a decision to Bryce Mitchell. And after that was after his UFC debut and is something of a submission artist. 9 submission victories on his resume. Again, both grapplers. This is going to be back and forth. And when you have that type of situation, limbs are flying all over the place. You know, obviously you try to tend to lean towards the dog here. You know, but when I look at this, this is another situation where an over 2.5 rounds presents itself. Both of these guys are at such a high level of wrestling and grappling that it's going to take a really careless mistake, uncharacteristic of them, to get this fight finished inside the distance on either side. Barzola's wrestling, in my estimation, going to give him enough time and top control to squeak out a very, very close 29-28 split decision.
So as you're talking there, I'm kind of thinking about this. You know, we look at Shevchenko, who's a massive favorite, and this isn't really the best example, but it's just kind of the same one on the card here. Maybe there's one on the prelims that's a better comparison. Shevchenko is this minus 1,300 favorite. If she knocks out Carmucci, wouldn't be all that surprising, I guess, given that she's such a big favorite. But it's a big line for a fight expected to go to a decision. Here in this Moffitt and Barzola fight, you just mentioned you've got two grapplers. It's a fight that's going to be down on the mat. If you've got two grapplers and a line that's this close with Barzola minus 135, is there kind of a correlation there in terms of looking to take the over 2.5 just from reading the context clues in the line?
You know, I really don't, man. I mean, the thing is every situation is unique. Now, you know, when we talk about this first fight in the prelims, that situation is definitely correlated with the betting line and why it is where it is. And it's also the narrative of why that opponent was chosen. In this situation, man, this line is just so close because they are both such high level grapplers. And that is where this fight is going to take place stylistically. And so it's just there. It's the levels is not, you know, anywhere close to how much better just about everywhere at this point in her career Shevchenko is over Carmucci when we look at where Barzola is over a guy like Bobby Moffitt in my estimation. So, you know, when I feel it's going to go to the decision, inherently the underdog is going to have value. But that's just the way that I see the play staying out or see the fight playing out. But that is, again, why I would go to the 2.5 rather than picking a side in total in that one.
All right, we do have one heavyweight fight on the card, and I know that you wanted to talk about this one. Ciryl Gane and Rafael Pessoa Nunez. This is a fight that, you know, we've kind of been waiting to see Gane get out there in the UFC and really have a chance to show what he's capable of, and it seems like you think that may happen here this weekend.
Yeah, the UFC is going to introduce the world to a brand new star here. And if you don't know who Ciryl Gane is, he is the protege of Francis Ngannou, who I'm sure everyone listening to this show for a UFC podcast will know. And the truth is, spars with him every single day, has some of the most vicious knockout power you have ever seen. And, you know, trains with Ngannou, is basically a Ngannou clone. That is the truth about who this guy is. If you're wondering why it took so long for him to get into the UFC, 7 fighters turned down this fight with him en route to trying to get him on the fight. And, you know, Rafael Pessoa, for everything, you know, God bless him for taking this fight. This fight was actually supposed to happen a long time ago in their regional scene promotion for their heavyweight title. So, you know, Pessoa, to get his kind of foot in the doors in the UFC, said, yeah, I'll you know, fight them. And this one, the big play for me here is the under 1.5 rounds, just because of the line on a guy like Gane. I'm sure you can take Gane via KO for it to knock a little bit of juice off, but when you're talking about a betting line for Gane north of -400, look, man, Gane is worth getting. You know, a star could be born here. You could see one of the most vicious knockouts you've ever kind of seen here. There's really not much more to say. This fight's going to be over very, very quickly. Two guys are going to walk to the middle. And I don't think it takes long for the UFC to get their kind of first glimpse and UFC fans to get their first glimpse into somebody who could be their next star.
Well, and as you mentioned, you know, the round props aren't out yet. We're recording this here on Thursday afternoon. And that also means that some of these lines, you know, may move around a little bit with weigh-ins and all that different type of stuff as well. But let me ask you this then, since you're pretty confident that the under 1.5 is good and that this may be over quick, are there alternate round props, or maybe you can bet, you know, over in the first round, something like that?
I've not really seen that. I mean, there's like exotic props out there. That's Gane wins in round one that I'll probably look at when a situation like this presents itself. If the juice isn't crazy, crazy, I'll, you know, diversify a little bit. Gane wins in round one, Gane via knockout under 1.5. But I haven't seen really alternate props in terms of, you know, 1.5, 2.5 fight goes to decision really out there in the market. I've never seen the ability to turn, you know, a 1.5 round prop that's hung out there into a 2.5 or vice versa, but there's definitely so-and-so wins in whatever round and method of victory that are out there. So I'll look to diversify a little bit with that narrative in mind.
All of this card here on ESPN Plus, both the main card and the prelim cards. So what else are you looking at here for the prelim card? Anything else kind of stand out?
Yeah, like we talked about last week, this situation of, you know, a potential discount with Mickey Gall. And I told you, initially I had looked to just auto fade Gall, you know, and did that in the write-up and then said there would be a little bit of a buy point for me just because you can't necessarily do that just because a guy, you know, looks as bad as he does when the opponent is that bad. And we look at this fight, the word discount certainly comes to mind with Tisha Torres here. And you know, Torres, on the surface, I completely understand it. You look at it, you think, you know, maybe she's just lost something. You know, she has lost 3 straight fights. And going into this against Marina Rodriguez. Look, Marina Rodriguez has been around the block, 11-0-1 in the sport, and 9 consecutive victories, you know, got her that spot on Contender Series for Brazil. She, 5 knockouts to her name. That being said, Tisha Torres by decision and Tisha Torres over 2.5 rounds is about as certain as Frankie Edgar's over 2.5 rounds. So that is certainly in play. But to me, I look at this and, you know, Torres is coming into this fight at a little bit of a crossroads, like I said, back against the wall. And when you look at who she's lost to and the quality of opponent, I mean, how can you really knock her? You know, maybe she's not on that 1A level anymore, but, you know, she's still Tisha Torres, and I think you're getting, if those fighters that she had just fought, the quality wasn't there, I would certainly start to look at the deterioration of her. I think she's just somebody who's not on that 1A level anymore. But I think that -150 tag on the favorite is a little bit warranted here in a situation where Rodriguez, you know, not going to know everything up Torres' sleeve, we'll say, and certainly does not have the experience of a Teacher Torres.
Last thing I want to mention here with regards to the prelim card, not that this is a be-all, end-all, but there are only three fighters on the prelim card that have their own Wikipedia pages. So what that implies to me is that we've got a lot of, you know, regional fighters. We have a lot of fighters that a lot of UFC fans, both casual and probably even some hardcore, really haven't seen a whole lot of all the competitors that are on this card. So what does that do for you? I mean, do you feel like that gives you some more advantages because you study the regional scenes, or does it seem like, you know, maybe we just have a lot of variance here? And the odds kind of suggest that too, because there aren't many big favorites on the prelim card.
No, there's not. And that's where you get to kind of go next level, man. YouTube will be your best friend if you want to get into handicapping kind of the prelim portions of cards. And I mean, that's where, you know, when we talk about how did people find value or how do I find value in these lesser known fighters, do you think odds makers are sitting there looking at YouTube footage of, you know, Kachenko on this, you know, Russian regional scene for 4 hours? You know, I don't think so, but that's just my opinion. That, you know, YouTube will be your best friend if you do want to dig into that, but that's kind of one of the ways that you can potentially build a advantage over the odds maker. And yeah, you mentioned it, man. A lot of, you know, under the radar fighters that people may not know about, but you know, you got to start somewhere. You put wins together, and soon, you know, everyone will know you. That's for sure. You know, when we talk about this, I mean, you have a guy in Alexei Kachenko coming in at 20-0. I mean, my God, M1 welterweight gold in what, 2016, fourth round knockout there. I mean, he's kind of done it all. You know, and so people get excited. Nobody really cares about your story until you win. So win is a great quote that's out there in the fight world, I guess. So, you know, people will gravitate towards what, you know, who and what they like to see, come Saturday night.
Anything else on the prelim card outside of, you know, looking at Tisha Torres and also looking at that over and the Gane fight as well? It sounds like you've got, you know, some pretty strong opinions about that. Anything else here on the prelim card that sort of piques your interest?
You know, Kachenko at -135, I think, is, you know, knockout certainly in play there. You know, you look at Gilbert Burns, came into the UFC at what, 3-0, and then lost straight, three straight. Vicious knockout loss to Dan Hooker, came back with two more wins. So he has really kind of been up and down. You know, Kachenko is coming in this one a little bit of short notice here, but I just think that the takedown defense of Kachenko, I mean, you don't get to 20-0 in mixed martial arts by being a fluke. This is a bad style matchup for a guy like Burns for sure. He shouldn't be able to stand and bang with a guy like Kachenko, and Kachenko's takedown defense is not going to allow Burns to do what he wants to do. So I think eventually along the way, Kachenko turns the lights out on a guy like Gilbert Burns. So that -135 is certainly appetizing.
Well, and then one last point to leave off on here. Next week, DC and Miocic, Anthony Pettis, Nate Diaz on the card, Yoel Romero, Derek Brunson, Manny Bermudez, who I know you've talked about a lot as a guy that, you know, gets a lot of subs and maybe a little bit of a one-trick pony. So much to talk about next week for the event in Anaheim.
I would say, yeah, man, this event in Anaheim upcoming, probably the event of the year, you know, since the last time, since the Vegas event. A couple others that have been kind of marquee, John Jones' original comeback. But this one, top to bottom, probably, when I look down through it, I mean, even down through the prelims, I mean, got Brandon Davis on there, Bermudez, like you talked about, Jakar Close. Probably top to bottom, one of the most loaded cards of the year. So we'll have a lot to talk about next week.
Should be a whole lot of fun, man. Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast wrote up a preview for this event over at bangthebook.com. He'll have a UFC 241 preview next week as well, and we'll be able to talk about this set of fights. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A. Christian, always a pleasure, brother. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy. Good luck this weekend.
There you go. There's Christian Pina again of the Sports Gambling Podcast at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A on Twitter. Coming up on Monday, new edition of the Bettors Box, including a Monday mailbag at Skating Tripods on Twitter or Adam at bangthebook.com via email. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Monday.